Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'll be filling in today for Joy Cardine. It's a short week, but a very big one in terms of presidential politics this week, as the Iowa caucuses are held tomorrow, and with them, the first actual glimpse of what voters are thinking about the slate of presidential candidates. The results of the Iowa caucuses will then be immediately dissected into a host of tiny pieces and will feed into the New Hampshire primary coming up next week. This hour, we'll be discussing the Iowa caucuses and their possible impact on the New Hampshire primary with our guest. He is Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College, and we'll be asking for your comments as well. What are you thinking about these two political events? On the one hand, they are the first sort of formal indication of what voters are thinking. On the other hand, most voters won't be going to either the caucuses or the polls in these states. And what does that say, if anything, about our election process? The number to call with your questions or comments, it's toll-free, 800-642-1234. Or if you're calling from the Madison area, you can use our local number. It is 263-1890. And don't forget, you can also join us with email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Dean Lacey, good morning, and welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you along. Well, let's get started right now. Over the weekend, over the holiday weekend, I imagine, even though you are in New Hampshire, you are taking a look at what's happening in Iowa, and what do you see from afar?
Well, the trend has been for Mike Huckabee to now become one of the top two or three Republican candidates, whereas a month or so ago, he didn't seem to be in that position. And the state of Iowa may be one of the few states that could have put him in that position, since it's a caucus and only the Republican faithful turn out to vote. And in Iowa also, you have a large percentage of Republican faithful, almost half, being considered evangelical Christians or members of the Christian right. That puts a candidate like Huckabee in a position where he could suddenly get a national stage, get some momentum, and raise some money before coming to New Hampshire.
And on the Democratic side?
The Democratic side has become interesting as well. A month or so ago, it looked like Hillary Clinton could be anointed the nominee. She had a lead in Iowa and a commanding lead in New Hampshire. Now, Iowa is a virtual statistical tie, according to the polls. So Edwards, Obama, and Clinton are virtually tied. And that's made the race in New Hampshire a little bit closer. Edwards is still behind in third place, but Obama and Clinton are now neck and neck in what we'd call a statistical tie. So the three-way tie in Iowa has, I think, created a momentum for Obama to be in a position to be close to Clinton in New Hampshire, which has made our race more interesting.
And as we obviously only one person is going to emerge at the top of the caucuses on both the Republican and Democratic side. But as the caucuses are completed and things wind down on Friday and people start taking a look at what happened, how are the folks who finished second and third going to be playing this? And then what about those candidates who are farther down on the list?
Well, one thing we can be certain of after the Iowa caucus is that everyone will declare some sort of victory.
Mm-hmm.
So every candidate can spin this into a victory of some sort. If Huckabee finishes in first place, obviously he can say that he's spent less per vote than any other candidate on the Republican side. He's established himself as the front runner, and he's a viable candidate. If he finishes second or third, he can say the same thing. If Huckabee finishes first in Iowa, then Romney or McCain or Giuliani finishing in second, third, or fourth place can say, well, Iowa is a state that's set up for a candidate like Mike Huckabee to win, and by finishing second or third or fourth, each of them has established themselves as a viable candidate heading into New Hampshire. On the Democratic side, the same is true. Any candidate will declare a victory with the first, second, or third place finish, especially if it's close. So if Edwards finishes in third place, even 10 points behind, he can say that with limited fundraising ability, he's managed to stay with the two candidates who have a larger fundraising base and appear to have more of the name recognition and are getting more of the free media, and so he's still a viable candidate. The candidates that could be hurt from Iowa are the ones who were expected early on to be the clear winners. So Hillary Clinton, if she finishes in third place in a distant third, could potentially be hurt, and it would be difficult for her to declare victory, but that's an unlikely scenario.
But practically everyone's going to emerge as a winner of some sort, depending on how they spin it.
Right.
Okay. Now then, as we move on into New Hampshire then, New Hampshire's coming up next week, and we've been focusing on Iowa an awful lot lately and learning about the caucus process. But New Hampshire is, I don't want to say just, but it's an actual primary, and it's the first in the country, and that is a state law, right?
That's right. So New Hampshire, a state law, requires that New Hampshire have the first primary in the nation. Now, it doesn't try to pass Iowa, which has the first caucus, because
right.
by New Hampshire law, a caucus is just different than a primary, and so New Hampshireans don't consider the Iowa caucus to be the same sort of thing, and so they don't try to leapfrog the Iowa caucus and are happy with the Iowa and New Hampshire's, the first and second in the presidential nominating process. But as a primary, the New Hampshire election is run by the state, not by the political parties. And New Hampshire has an open primary, which means that anyone can show up to vote on either party ticket. That means you can pick up whichever party's ballot you want. And New Hampshire also has more registered undeclareds or independent voters than it does partisans on either side. So 44% of the voters in the last election were undeclareds, 30% Republican, 26% Democratic. And one of the question marks here is what percentage of those undeclared voters will show up to vote next Tuesday. Polls up to about 2 or 3 weeks ago showed that of those undeclareds who intended to vote in the primary, about 70% said they were going to pick up a Democratic ballot, so vote on the Democratic side, and the remaining 30% were going to vote Republican. So the candidates here have to appeal to these undeclared swing voters who may or may not have the interest to show up next Tuesday.
Lots to talk about, and we're going to continue our discussion of Iowa tomorrow and then New Hampshire next week with Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College. We'd like to find out what you think as well. We've got an open line for you at 800-642-1234. And if you're calling from the Madison area, 263-1890. How will Iowa affect what happens next week in New Hampshire? And then what are you expecting to come out of New Hampshire? 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes after 7 o'clock. Coming up after 9 this morning, Veronica Rickert is in for Kathleen Dunn. And have you ever wondered what Wisconsin will look like in 100 years? After 9, Veronica's guests discuss a possible future scenario if climate change continues. That's up after 9 this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we are taking a look at Iowa from New Hampshire. Dean Lacey is with us, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College, and we are talking about the Iowa caucuses and then sort of fast-forwarding to next week and the New Hampshire primary. We'd like to take your phone calls as well at 800-642-1234. If you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. And Professor Lacey, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the voter makeup in New Hampshire. 44% of the voters there undeclared in terms of a party affiliation. And that does set up some interesting scenarios. And how do have the candidates been trying to appeal to those swing voters as they've made their campaign appearances in New Hampshire?
Well, since over two-thirds of those undeclared voters have said in polls that they intend to vote for the Democrat on the Democratic side, it's made Edwards and Obama in particular seek those undeclared voters, since Hillary Clinton still has a commanding lead among registered Democrats. So most of the appeals to the undeclared voters have come from the Democrats. However, when the Democratic race looked like it would be a runaway with Clinton winning, the race on the Republican side became more about appealing to these centrist voters, in particular candidates like John McCain and Rudy Giuliani. So it appears that among those undeclareds, McCain is doing better among Republicans than any of the other candidates, which has put him into second place right now, according to the polls. Mitt Romney from neighboring Massachusetts still has a commanding lead. He has a lot of name recognition here since he was governor of a neighboring state, and most of New Hampshire is covered by the Boston media market. But the election could still come down on the Republican side to who can get among those one-third of undeclareds who may turn out, who can get more of them on their side.
We talked earlier in the hour about how Mike Huckabee is sort of coming out of nowhere in Iowa. And what's he doing in New Hampshire?
He's in fourth place right now. He may get into a tie or close to a tie in third place. If he does any better than that, it would be surprising. So if Mike Huckabee comes out of Iowa with a win and then finishes in the top two in New Hampshire, he would be the candidate with the momentum. The problem that Mike Huckabee faces in New Hampshire is that among the Republicans and in the undeclared voters, there's a stronger strain of social libertarianism. And there aren't as many social conservatives on the Republican side here as in a state like Iowa or almost any other state. New Hampshire has a strong libertarian streak on the Republican side, and so that helps candidates like McCain and Giuliani, and also to some extent Mitt Romney, and it hurts Mike Huckabee. So if he no matter what happens to Mike Huckabee in New Hampshire, he'll declare victory, and that's because he's not expected to do well here.
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number you can use if you'd like to join in the discussion. If you're calling from the Madison area, it's 263-1890. Don't forget you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Gary is with us from Fitchburg right now, and good morning, Gary.
Good morning. I have some concerns. I tend to vote Democratic, and I tend to be somewhat to the left of center. My concerns are Obama seems to be getting a free ride in the corporate media, which is to me is kind of a red flag. And the other concern here with Obama is if McCain is the Republican nominee, which if the Republicans are smart, they'll choose McCain. McCain will attract a lot of independent voters and a lot of swing voters from moderate Democrats, and if the Democrats are silly enough to shoot themselves in the foot and choose Obama, Obama versus McCain will be similar to McGovern versus Nixon, and Obama will get absolutely creamed. And this is what I'm concerned about with a lot of naive people who are buying the Obama rock star thing. When the corporate media pounds Hillary and gives Obama a free ride, it's telling me to beware. And like I say, if Obama is our nominee, the Democratic nominee versus McCain, it will be like McGovern versus Nixon, and Obama is no McGovern.
All right, Gary, thanks for the call. Professor Lacey, a couple of things there. And I guess let's start with the Obama element first. In your estimation, is Senator Obama getting a free ride from the media?
I'm not sure I'd say he's getting a free ride. There's been less criticism of both Edwards and Obama in the media, in large part because neither one has extensive experience. Both have been a one-term senator, and Obama hasn't completed his first term. So Hillary Clinton has a much longer history to attack. And so I think that's what you're seeing, not necessarily the lack of personal attacks against Obama, but the fact that there's just more material there to work with on Hillary Clinton. And I've heard the same argument made about Hillary Clinton becoming the nominee, that if McCain is the Republican nominee, that Hillary Clinton will lose that election because she won't appeal to the independent or swing voters. And Edwards has been making that case as well about both Obama and Clinton. His argument has been that he's the most electable of the three candidates by appealing to the undeclared or swing voters. And I'm not sure that's the case for Obama or for Hillary. Remember, Canada has to win only 50% plus one of the vote and actually can end up losing the popular vote but winning the Electoral College vote. So it all comes down to Electoral College math. And places where Obama or Clinton or Edwards or any other candidate on the Democratic side would come close to a candidate like McCain among the swing voters probably aren't states that are going to be in play for the Democrats anyway. So the Democrats can hope to win in the Electoral College by winning some large states like California, Illinois, New York, and picking up the states they've been picking up in the past few elections and hopefully adding one or two more. And those states are likely to be the swing states, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, all places where Obama or Clinton could do fairly well by picking up poorer voters, and Obama could do well, and Clinton as well, by picking up African-American voters and getting increased turnout there. So I don't think either Obama or Hillary is unelectable, even in a matchup against John McCain.
And the comparison with Nixon and McGovern in 72, of course, that was a sitting president. Again, it's way, way too early, but that was a blowout. And do you see that sort of thing happening, or are we just too far ahead of the game right now to make predictions like that?
Well, I think that's too far ahead of the game, but you're right to note that that was a sitting president. The electoral context was very different. This is an election in which looking forward to next November is very difficult to do, but I don't see a blowout happening. In fact, I'd see this election more like 2000 and 2004, fought state by state in the Electoral College.
Let's go to Lake Geneva right now, and Kyle joins us. Good morning, Kyle.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to ask a quick question and make a comment. My question is about the Iowa caucuses. I don't know a lot about it because every time I read about it, it's just very complicated sounding. And I'm not sure, is it just a one-day event? Because I've read in some places that, is it like 30 days that goes on of all this stuff? Or is it just a one-day event? Because I've read some different things on that. And also,
okay.
I just wanted to make the comment that I think that we'll see... I think we'll see a big surprise out of Ron Paul in Iowa and in New Hampshire. You mentioned that the libertarian streak in New Hampshire will benefit Giuliani or Romney, but I think that's totally wrong. I think Ron Paul will get all those independent libertarian-leaning voters. So that's all, and thanks a lot.
All right, Kyle, thanks for the call. Professor Lacey, the question, let's get another two-parter here. First on the caucuses, it seems like they've been going on forever, but it all comes down to one night tomorrow.
Well, it comes down to one night and then three succeeding nights stretched out over the next 5 months. The way this works is that precincts meet and caucus on January 3rd, and they select delegates to the county conventions. And the county conventions are on March 15th, and the delegates to that select delegates to the district conventions on April 26th. And then those delegates meet to select members to the state convention on June 14th. And then all those delegates meet on June 14th to select the nominee. So it's a four-step process, and January 3rd is really just selecting the precinct-level delegates, which makes the caucuses very interesting. And also... tougher to read national trends out of a caucus in which people are the Republican Party faithful and Democratic Party faithful are meeting only for one day to select their delegates to the county conventions. Now, the second question was, what about Ron Paul in New Hampshire? And in fact, I see more Ron Paul signs up here than signs for anyone else. But that hasn't translated into good poll numbers for him here. He's still back in single digits. He's still in fifth or sixth place. Right now, he seems to be doing better than Fred Thompson, which would put him in fifth place, according to the polls. Are a lot of undeclareds going to show up and vote for Ron Paul on next Tuesday? And that one, it's harder to say because he still doesn't quite have the media attention and the name recognition that would be needed to get the usually disinterested undeclared voters ready to come out and vote for him. The voters who already like him are generally Republicans who are a little bit disaffected from the National Republican Party because they are libertarians, and they've been pledging their support for him for the past 3 or 4 months. And so I just don't see him digging in to get a lot more of those undeclared voters next Tuesday, but he could.
We're talking about the Iowa caucuses from the vantage point of New Hampshire with Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College. And we'd like to find out what you think as well. How are you thinking about these two political events? If you'd like to join in, we'll be taking your calls after this look at the news. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. And if you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell. And I'm here filling in for Joy Cardine this week, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at the Iowa caucuses from the vantage point of New Hampshire this morning as we talk with Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College. We'd like to find out what you think about what's happening in Iowa and then what will happen next week in New Hampshire. Here's our toll-free number. We have an open line for you at 800-642-1234. If you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. You can also join by email at talk@wpr.org. Let's head right to the phones right now, and Mike is with us from Whitehall this morning. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, which is this. In listening to the news leading up to the caucuses and the primary, the National Democratic Party has reduced or removed the number of delegates from the convention of certain states, Michigan being one of them, because of holding their primaries too soon. I'm wondering what effect this is going to have on the overall nominating process.
All right, Mike, thanks for the question. And Professor Lacey, what effect is this going to have?
Well, both Michigan and Florida have had delegates stripped in completely by the Democrats and reduced by half by the Republicans for moving their primaries too early. Now, the effect in Florida of Florida on the Democratic side is going to be pretty clear, which is Obama and Edwards and Richardson aren't even running. The only candidate who'd be a front runner who is running in Florida is Hillary Clinton. And so the results from Florida will have Hillary Clinton in first place. The other candidates will say they didn't contest that state, and so will have virtually no effect on the nomination. Michigan could be more interesting, and there have been some statements from Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, that the nominee or the party's nominee could have some influence on whether the Michigan delegates are actually seated at the convention. And so Michigan could have some impact, both by having some delegates that potentially could vote at the convention, but also, since all of the candidates are running in Michigan, the results, even if Michigan doesn't get its delegate seated at the convention, could be important for establishing some momentum. Michigan's voting on January 15th, South Carolina on the Democratic side on January 26th. So Michigan on the 15th and then Nevada on the 19th are the only two states between New Hampshire's primary on January 8th and then South Carolina's on January 26th. So you can see the candidates probably targeting Michigan and Nevada, trying to jockey for position before they lead up to the important South Carolina primary on the 26th.
And this sort of brings up the whole topic of the early primaries and what has happened in the last couple of years. Email from Karen in Platteville, who says primaries are too early right now, and has a couple of suggestions. First, the primary election should last 2 days, Fridays and Saturdays, but she would prefer a rotating sectional primary or a nationwide primary in July, when she says more people can get to the polls and caucuses. And a couple of things, Professor, what do you think about those suggestions? And then what do you think about the sort of the state of the primaries are now, where everything is racing earlier and earlier? New Hampshire's still first. They have to be, of course. But, you know, you're running out of time.
Right. There are all sorts of reforms that we could institute that might help clean up this election process. The primaries and caucuses themselves right now, I don't think, are a significant problem other than the states trying to jockey for position being first. New Hampshire and Iowa have staked out their claims on being first. And the problem isn't that those two states have staked out first as much as it is that the other states are now trying to crowd in right behind them. And so 40% of the delegates on both the Republican and Democratic sides will be selected on Super Tuesday, February 5th. And that's way too early. Those primaries and caucuses need to be spread out a little more. And also you get big states like Michigan and Florida that are swing states in the general election and have a lot of delegates now trying to leapfrog Iowa and New Hampshire, which are smaller states and don't have that much influence over the general election, though both have become actually swing states in the past few elections. So there are some proposals being floated like penalizing states, taking away their delegates if they move too early, and that's what happened this year with both Michigan and Florida. Others have suggested some regional primaries. My concern about the regional primaries is that if right now we like to think that Iowa and New Hampshire have this overwhelming influence on the nominee in both parties, but really they don't. The nominees still get most of their money and have to appeal mostly to the voters of their important base states. On the Democratic side, that's California and New York. On the Republican side, that's Texas and a block of southern states. And so those states really are the ones that are selecting the nominees. And then in the general election, they have to appeal to these swing states, the large swing states, states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. And so I like seeing the smaller states with some influence over the party's nominees. And so I like seeing Iowa and New Hampshire early on. And there are other states that could, small states that could make claims for having early primaries, but just haven't decided to. The states that did this year were the two larger states, Florida and Michigan.
There is that cachet, though, I think, of being first in Iowa and in New Hampshire. That's a tough one. And there is a certain economic benefits as well.
Oh, absolutely. People here like to say that this is our version of the Kentucky Derby. And it really is. People take a lot of pride in voting in the first in the nation primary. They put a lot of effort into getting to know the candidates, becoming informed. Voters in many other states would do the same thing. But for some reason, it's just New Hampshire has decided that this is what it does. And it's also, you know, a candidate who wants to campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire in November, December, and January is really showing that they want to become the party's nominee. Campaigning in Las Vegas and Tampa in December and January isn't campaigning, it's a vacation.
Yeah, it's not slogging through the snow and, you know, sitting in diners and all that sort of thing, right?
Right.
Let's go to Bruce right now. He joins us from Trevor. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Gene. My question's about Rudy Giuliani. Now, ever since he got sick in Missouri, it seems like I don't know. He's conceded Iowa, but how's he doing in New Hampshire? Is there all I can think of to call it is there a wussy factor? Who would vote for a guy that has to run to the hospital every time his nose starts running?
All right, Professor, what do you think about that? Has he disappeared since he had his health issues a week or two ago, or is this part of his strategy?
I don't think it's part of his strategy, but he is on the decline in New Hampshire. He was in second behind Mitt Romney, and now he's fallen behind John McCain into third place and almost in a tie with Mike Huckabee here. Now, what's contributed to Rudy Giuliani's decline? Part of it is that he doesn't seem to be advertising as much in Iowa and New Hampshire. He's now getting a few ads up in New Hampshire. He doesn't seem to have had as many appearances here. He's appealing. He is planning more on being able to stick in this for the long haul because of his financial backing and his name recognition, and hope to do well on Super Tuesday. Now, does getting ill affect how voters perceive Rudy Giuliani? I don't think so. Most voters still see him as a tough guy. They know he's had prostate cancer, and he made it through that. And I don't think that voters look at him as the caller called it, the wussy candidate. They still see him as a tough, viable candidate. But Iowa and New Hampshire just aren't playing to his strengths. He can't even be the regional candidate in New Hampshire because Mitt Romney from neighboring Massachusetts is getting a lot more attention in New Hampshire. So among the early primary states, Rudy Giuliani, and I don't think ever really stood a huge chance based on his appeal as a libertarian-leaning Republican, and also he didn't have the regional appeal in New England or in the Midwest.
And also a little bit of baggage coming out here and there about some of his financial dealings while he was mayor of New York.
Right, and that's another thing that I think we've known about for a while, his relationship with Bernard Kerik and others, that there's some baggage with Rudy Giuliani, his divorces, his health problems, his financial dealings. Yet at the same time, a lot of his supporters, most candidates at some level have some stories that will come out about them and something like that. So I don't think Giuliani has more scandal in his past that's been released lately than many of the other candidates. His candidacy isn't over, and he could still do really well, a strong showing. And he's one of the candidates who, if he finishes third or fourth in Iowa or New Hampshire, can declare victory from it. And he probably has enough cash on hand and enough of national appeal to compete well on Super Tuesday.
And so then if he does do well, he's got the cash, and then all of a sudden, to turn it around, we're going to see a lot more advertising, and he will become more visible.
Exactly. Just remember that in 1992, Bill Clinton didn't win either Iowa or New Hampshire, but swept the table on Super Tuesday. And so a candidate can lose the early caucuses and primaries and still do pretty well, even if they don't have national name recognition, but if they have the momentum and the money.
It's a powerful combination. Professor Dean Lacy is with us, a political science professor at Dartmouth College. And we are taking a look at the Iowa caucuses from the vantage point of New Hampshire and what might happen in that state next week. And we're also taking a look beyond that as well. We'd like to find out what you think. We've got a couple open lines for you right now. 800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. And you can also join us if you'd like to call our local number in Madison, 263-1890. Email works too, talk@WPR.org. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 8, we'll be taking a look at the signals that our body gives us each day that can help us determine when to visit the doctor. We're talking about the book Body Signs. That's coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. For the rest of this hour, we are continuing our discussion of the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primaries and the presidential elections. Our guest is Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College, and we'd like you to be part of the discussion as well. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. If you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. Let's go to Milwaukee right now, and Mike joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. My comment is connected to what the professor just said about Clinton not winning either Iowa or New Hampshire. I'm tired of this whole Iowa caucus process. From what I've heard, 7 to 19% of the Iowa Democrats participate in this caucus. It's really a meaningless exercise in democracy. And I think what's happening with the political parties is they're doing everything possible to keep the selection of their candidates away from the people. Why don't we do something as radical as having a national primary, say, in the spring or summer of the election year, so that the candidates have to focus on the entire country and allow the people to elect the candidate? It's reached the absurdity where the political parties tell states, big states like Florida or Michigan, that their process doesn't count. And we, the people, put up with this nonsense. I'll listen to the professor's comments.
Mike, thanks for the call. And Professor Lacey, there's somebody there who is very unhappy with the process. And, you know, he uses low turnout as an example of other people who are disaffected by that as well. Your impressions of that?
I think he's right that the nominating process has gotten out of the hands of the public. Having it in the hands of the public is a relatively recent phenomenon. It wasn't something that the parties really allowed until the 1970s. And the parties are now trying to ratchet back some of the public's influence over the nominees, in part because public participation is what brought the Democrats George McGovern in 72. And that was a process in which we had more primaries selecting delegates. McGovern was able to appeal to the rank-and-file voter. And so there's this debate within the party about do they want more public participation in selecting the nominees and potentially selecting what I'd call, or they might call, the wrong nominees, or is trying to select candidates who can appeal more broadly. And I think there has to be a better way to get candidates who can appeal to more broadly to rank-and-file voters. The problem is low turnout probably won't change even if we have a national primary. So we'll get less than 20% of registered Democrats or Republicans showing up in Iowa and probably New Hampshire as well. But in congressional elections, we rarely get more than 30 or 35% of people who vote. And even in presidential elections, we rarely get more than 60%, and often even less than 50% of people who vote. So having a large nationwide primary, I'm not sure, is going to change that low turnout. It may be that people are less interested in participating in Iowa and New Hampshire because they feel that they don't have as much influence over the process. But my guess is that having Iowa and New Hampshire early causes turnout to be higher in those states, that you get more people showing up in Iowa and New Hampshire because they're early on and more media attention is paid to them. And then if you had a nationwide primary, you could see even 5 or 10% turnout in those states, in the early states.
But it sounds like from where you sit, the low turnout, because people always are sort of pointing fingers at what causes low turnout, but it almost sounds like it's just sort of the way it's going to be no matter what.
I think the turnout in the presidential nominating season will be low regardless of the kinds of reforms that we adopt. You're still going to see less than a quarter and probably less than a fifth, even of strong partisans showing up to vote.
One of the columns I read this morning about the Iowa caucuses is that it said, well, at the very least, if nothing else, I mean, there's going to be a lot of winners that come out of this, but at the very least, it will weed out some of the candidates who don't have any kind of a chance. And we haven't talked about a lot of the candidates who are running either on the Republican or the Democratic side. I'm thinking of folks like Joe Biden or Bill Richardson or Dennis Kucinich. On the GOP side, there's a couple of them out there. That we haven't talked a lot about Mitt Romney. But what about some of those folks who don't have much of a chance? Are we going to be weeding those out in the next couple of weeks, or do you see them hanging on for a bit?
Well, some of them will hang on for a bit. Dennis Kucinich will be there for a while. He's been in this position before and not finished in the top four or five in many states and maintained his candidacy. Joe Biden and Chris Dodd, as U.S. senators, I think have I suspect they'll stay in for a while. None of those three will likely be the party's nominee, and so they might end up in a position where they could throw their support to one of the major party, or one of the three winners out of Iowa, New Hampshire, and there I'm talking about Clinton, Obama, and Edwards. So I suspect we'll see those candidates staying in for a while. Mike Gravel is one who might exit early on the Democratic mm-hmm. side. On the Republican side, Fred Thompson had a lot of early support and came out with much fanfare, and since then has just tanked. And in part, it's because he keeps telling people he doesn't really want to be president, and he thinks that that will make people more likely to vote for him, that we're in an era in which people want to vote for someone who doesn't want to hold the office. But I think it's probably hurt him, and his candidacy may not be able to hold on if he doesn't finish in the top three or four in Iowa and New Hampshire, and I don't think he's going to. After that, on the Republican side, I think you'll see most of these candidates remaining in. John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, who are probably going to finish third and fourth in the two early states, have enough name recognition that they can hold on. McCain might have a little trouble raising money, and so he might be out after Super Tuesday if he can't win a state or two and have a strong showing. But I don't see any early exits here, and in part that makes this interesting because it's a wide open nomination on the side of both parties. We haven't had something like this in over 5 decades, and it could be anybody's nomination at this point. So I suspect you'll see more people staying in longer than they have in previous years. And when I say longer, I mean contesting more primaries, even though the early exiters will still be out by mid-February, but that will be after about 50% of the delegates are chosen.
So given all of that, and the caucuses are coming up tomorrow, the primary next week in New Hampshire, what is this weekend going to be like in New Hampshire? Is it going to just be craziness as candidates pop up at every single diner and event and church and, you know, wherever?
I think it will be. Right now, more of the candidates seem focused on Iowa because it's coming up tomorrow and because the race has been tighter there than in New Hampshire. But right after Iowa, you'll see those candidates making a sharp turn over to New Hampshire. And so I expect that we'll see all sorts of candidates and people campaigning for the candidates here in the 4 or 5 days leading up to the New Hampshire primary. And then after that, they'll turn to Nevada, which is January 19th, and then South Carolina on January 26th. And some will take a foray into Michigan on January 15th. But so you'll see them moving through these in sequence up until Super Tuesday on February 5th.
Now, as we watch what happens here in Wisconsin, of course, Iowa is relatively close to home. Next Tuesday, after the New Hampshire primary is done, what are some of the things that we should be paying attention to on the Republican and the Democratic side? And I guess let's start with the Democrats. As the New Hampshire primary winds up, what should we be watching for as the candidates then head on to the rest of the primary season?
One will be after the candidates spin the election. That is, each mm-hmm. one of them will declare victory out of New Hampshire. One thing to look for is which candidates are getting more of the free media attention. That is, which candidates' faces are on the evening news more often, and which candidates are able to raise a little bit more money. And then the next important stop is going to be Nevada, followed by South Carolina. And on the Democratic side, John Edwards is going to have to come in second place or better in one of those states in order to keep going. He's in a tie in Iowa. He's in third place in New Hampshire. If he doesn't come in the top two in either of those states, and then he's got to pick up either Nevada or South Carolina. And he won South Carolina 4 years ago, which is the state he was born in. And right now he's in a distant third in that state. So Edwards will have to move quickly to try to establish himself in South Carolina and Nevada. Now, on the Republican side, it's more of a free-for-all, and it's hard to say what's going to happen after New Hampshire. Mike Huckabee will try to target South Carolina, and he needs to do well there. You'll see Giuliani and McCain moving more to Nevada. One of the questions will be, after New Hampshire, is Mitt Romney a national candidate, or is he just an Iowa-New Hampshire candidate? National polls still have Republicans favoring Giuliani and McCain because Mitt Romney doesn't have the national name recognition yet. And so we'll see if he can move the Iowa-New Hampshire showings that he's likely to have, which he's likely to finish in the top two or three, to a national stage as he moves to California, New York, and Illinois, and the other big states that vote on Super Tuesday.
And I guess for you, in terms of a wide-open election, the first one like this, and I think you said 5 decades, must be a great time to be a political scientist.
It is a great time to be a political scientist. It's fun to watch. We could be rewriting the history books after this. We don't have a lot of cases of wide open primaries without or caucuses without an incumbent president or vice president running. Both sides, we have three or four candidates who are in virtual ties in the early states, so it makes for very interesting politics. And hopefully we'll see those turnout numbers in all these states get above the 17% to 19% that a previous caller mentioned.
Dean Lacy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate your time. Dean Lacy is a professor of political science at Dartmouth College, and we've been taking a look at the Iowa caucuses from the vantage point of New Hampshire and trying to figure out what's going to happen within the next week or so. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can listen on our web archives at WPR.org. Karen Prager produced this hour, and we had on-air production from Leo Duran. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in this week for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.